Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Please from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 10, Text Number 11.
Tasmat jigasaya atmanam.
Jigasaya, by the cultivation of knowledge.
By the cultivation of knowledge.
Atmanam,
Atmanam,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Atma,
Atman,
within oneself.
Within oneself.
Stam,
Stam,
situated.
Situated.
Kevalam,
Kevalam,
pure. Param, transcendental and supreme.
Transcendental and supreme.
Sangamya,
Sangamya,
approaching for realized knowledge.
Approaching for realized knowledge.
Niraset,
Niraset,
one should give up.
One should give up.
Etat,
Etat,
this,
this,
Vastu,
Vastu,
within material objects.
Within material objects.
Buddhim,
Buddhim,
concept of reality.
Concept of reality.
Yathakramam,
Yathakramam,
gradually, step by step. Translation. Therefore, by the cultivation of knowledge, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within oneself. By understanding the Lord's pure transcendental existence, one should gradually give up the false vision of the material world as independent reality. Purport. The word yathakramam, step by step, means that after first realizing oneself to be different from the gross material body, one should then progressively detach oneself from material mental activity. In this verse, yathavastu buddhim means seeing the material world as existing independently rather than correctly seeing all things as emanations of the Absolute Truth. When one correctly identifies oneself as eternal spiritual form, one achieves the real fruit of knowledge. The Lord is eternally manifest in His eternal form, and the living entity is similarly manifest in His eternal form as the loving servitor of the Lord. When we falsely assume that temporary, illusory, material objects are real, knowledge of our eternal spiritual form is covered by ignorance. If, however, one meditates upon the Lord's supreme presence within everything, one can return to the normal, blissful state of spiritual life. Every human being should seriously endeavour to understand the Absolute Truth, as indicated in this verse by the word Vigasaya. Tasmad jigasayatmanam atmasam kevalam param sangamyat nirasit etat vastu buddhim yathakramam. Therefore, by the cultivation of knowledge, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within oneself. By understanding the Lord's pure transcendental existence, one should gradually give up the false vision of the material world as independent reality. So in these verses, of course, Lord Sri Krishna is speaking personally to Arjuna, to Uddhava, sorry, and he has been describing to Uddhava the actual reality that of the nature of the spirit soul, which is eternal, different from the material body, which is temporary, and that one should search out one's spiritual nature, seeing oneself as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and revive that eternal, transcendental, loving relationship and go back to the spiritual world. That's the essence of what Krishna is saying here. After this introductory explanation of reality, Lord Krishna, throughout many, many chapters, leading up to the last few chapters of the 11th canto, will actually then defeat all opposing conceptions of reality, opposing goals, opposing processes other than what he's presenting here. Here he's presenting that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, is the ultimate goal, destination, which is achieved only through bhakti yoga, and that all living entities who are eternal servants of the Lord should take up that process of bhakti and therefore revive that loving eternal relationship and activities in relationship to Bhagavan. That's the premise here. In many chapters then he gradually defeats other processes and goals which are presented within the Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, or even atheists. All those are systematically defeated as being the essence of everything. So here Lord Krishna, now in these verses Lord Krishna has been explaining the nature of the self, the spirit soul. And now he's explaining that by the cultivation of knowledge one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within oneself. This, and he is saying step by step. So in Krishna's instructions here, a very good order of how to present Krishna consciousness in order for people to gradually understand something. So first he's presented the nature of the soul as being different from the body. And now he's gradually progressing to state that the next step, of course, is one should realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then with this knowledge of the soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can then become detached from material existence. So it's a very nice order that he presents things in. He's not saying straight off that people should become detached from material existence, because as we know, if we if we go to someone and we say, start telling them that you should give up material activities, they will say, why are you saying such a crazy thing? For what reason? Would I want to give up everything that I live for? They couldn't understand it. There must be a reason. There must be some powerful impetus. They must see that yes, because there is a very important purpose. Therefore, when you say to me, become detached from material existence, I can immediately accept that that is the right thing to do. Right? But if we try to encourage people to become detached from material existence without cultivating preliminary knowledge of the nature of the soul and the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will just not accept it. So it's a very good sequence of Krishna's showing us how to preach Krishna consciousness personally. 推行着 Buddha 的。And Buddha, of course, knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to demonstrate how to preach, then he is, you know, asking the right questions and listening attentively. So, the first point, of course, is this understanding that we're not the body, but we're the spirit soul. That's the real key to understanding anything. We see that Srila Prabhupada also very expert in preaching. We know that he's expert in preaching because he turned all of us into devotees throughout the whole world. So he must be an expert. He made thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of devotees, and his books will make thousands and thousands of devotees for all time to come. Now, if you look at the way Srila Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness, he followed this step by step, introduced knowledge which is appropriate, then introduced other knowledge. You cannot introduce a higher knowledge before the preliminary knowledge is understood. Just in the same way that we've all had the experience that we go to primary school, we go to secondary school, we go to tertiary school. If you follow mathematics along, you go to primary school and the teacher says, so now we will do geometry and some algebra, and the students are thinking, well, that they haven't even learnt to count from 1 to 10. They don't even know the difference between what does 5 represent and what does 3 represent. They don't know the values. If you don't know what is the difference between 3 and 5, then how can you possibly go any further in mathematics? Okay. So, this understanding of the spirit soul, until we come to that point, we have no knowledge. Until we understand we're a spirit soul, we cannot understand anything. And whatever knowledge we think we have, it's all illusion. That is the beginning. We may be a scientist, a philosopher, a politician, a scholar, anything. But if we don't know that we are a spirit soul, an eternal spirit soul, not this body, all our other knowledge is based upon illusion. And for want of this knowledge that we are a spirit soul, no one can understand anything about religion. It is not possible to actually understand real religious principles until the living entity comes to that point to understand that there is a spirit soul. Why is that? Why is that? Why can we not understand real religious principles until we come to that point of understanding that we're a spirit soul?
Can you feel the spiritual battle?
What's that?
They're on the spiritual platform.
They're on the spiritual platform? Sorry, what was that?
Spiritual principles, they're on the spiritual platform.
The higher religious principles are many religious principles actually on the material platform, still conditioned by the mode that, you know, for people, there are religious principles for people in the mode of ignorance, religious principles for people in the mode of passion, you know, religious principles for people in sattva or you know, goodness, and religious principles for those on the transcendental platform. So, not all religious principles, the majority of them, in preliminary, actually on the material platform.
If you don't know who God is, how can you love Him? You can love Him in a personal thing, but ultimately it's just a mirror, it's a mirror.
Yes, in fact, if you don't know who God is, you can't love Him. So how is that related to the fact that if you don't understand that you're a spirit soul, you cannot understand religion?
Sorry?
So how does that relate to it?
Well, isn't love? We're just loving the converted reflection, the manifestation of all the different aspects of the world.
Well, what most people take as love is actually lust.
But if you see the sun, you appreciate the sun, you actually appreciate Krishna indirectly, without knowing who he is.
Well, most people look at the sun as a ball of, you know, glowing gaseous fire in the sky, and they have no conception or appreciation of Krishna. In fact, to them the sun proves that God
doesn't exist. Because, you know, like, there's so many religionists, and they do see that as God's energy and all.
Yeah, but they don't follow. The majority of people who accept religion,
if they still love the sun, then they're still loving Krishna. Even if they don't know who he is. Isn't that right? Or is that wrong?
No, it's not correct. For instance, Krishna says, although I am everything, I'm also not everything. And so, you know, in one sense, we're all created from, you know, earth, water, fire, air and ether, so we're all one. So, if I want to give my child a glass of milk, and instead I give it to the goat down the road, you know, and so it's all one, we're all composed, you know, it's all connected somehow or another. But actually, if I give the milk to the goat, the child doesn't actually receive any benefit. So, and then if the child starves to death and dies, what sort of love would that be? That's, you know.
But most people
just
cheated.
But it hasn't answered the question.
Yeah.
You've sort of jumped. You've jumped to a platform now talking about love. What is God? What is not God? About, you know, simultaneously one and different. The chinchit, Veda, Tattva. But you know, the question is, most of that topic, people will say, what are you talking about? There is no God. You're talking about love of God, you're talking about the sun is one with God, you're talking about this, there is no God.
Yeah, they're all just generalizations.
Yes, but so my point is, until you come to understand one is the spirit soul, all other talks about God are useless. Because they can't understand God, and even if they offer some lip service that God is present, they actually won't follow because they don't really trust or have any faith in God. The slogan of America is, in God we trust, but no one trusts God.
Yeah, but that's still generalizations, because not everyone has the same mindset. We're all meant to be loved by Krishna, so by branding everyone the same, you know, way, then how is that, you know, like, they all don't know that you're a spirit soul. Yeah, that's okay, but in the house, and you know, that they love this, so they can see the sun and they appreciate it more. This is God's
call. Well, again, if we come back to the example I used, if you say to all the children in primary school, you know, let's discuss quantum physics, you know, because it's all related to the mathematics, and they'll say, you know, they cannot enter into that discussion because they haven't learned basic mathematics. So, if we enter into any of those discussions about God, you know, like, as far as if you start talking about chemistry and physics to children in primary school, they think you're talking about magic. They still think it's something that comes out of a uniform form.
Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated.
Therefore, the whole world is
complicated.
Yeah.
That they won't be able to realize it.
That's my exact.
Krishna's water, they can actually go, oh wow, this is Krishna's water. Maybe this is.
But that is complicated for people who, you know, you say Krishna, you introduce the concept Krishna, and they say Krishna's water, and say, I saw the water fall from the sky. You're making it complicated, and actually the water just fell from the sky. That's a simple understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas they think you're complicated.
That's
the
impersonal understanding, of course.
So,
if you do present it, actually Krishna is the benefactor, then they can realize that.
But again, Krishna, they're saying my benefactor is my boss. I work for my boss, he gives me my money.
Yeah, that's true.
And when I go home, whatever allowance I'm given, is,
I understand what you're saying, but really, I'm sorry to interject like this, but I understand what you're saying, and it is a complete fact, but I just think that it's easily presented. Krishna consciousness is a simple thing, and people can take that to heart straight away. Even if they don't know that Krishna is God, then if you say, this is the water, this is Krishna's impersonal energy, then that can appreciate that. So then gradually, step by step.
If we go out in the street now, Tessa, and talk to 100 people,
still,
and say this is Krishna's water,
that's
if you find one of those who accept that, I'd be very surprised.
People are taking it.
The people who have been purified with preliminary knowledge can accept that. So, in the same way that if you present to children in primary school that that Prabhupada gives the example that when he was a child, he saw the tram cars running down the road, and he thought, I will get a stick, touch the wire, and I will also be propelled down the road like this. That's how someone, at that age, they have no concept of how one thing, the sequence of graduations of knowledge by which electricity is pushing that tram car down the road. They just sit, there's a big jump. And for them, I'll put the stick there, and I'll also, just like, and then he gives the example that, one of his children said, Dad, do you also have a wife? That's the sort of question that, how did you come into existence? You don't have a mother. If I don't have a wife, then, how were you born? So the question, within the question, you can see that there's no real understanding of the sequence of events of knowledge which connects one thing to another. And that's exactly what it's like in presenting. If we present Krishna, or even God, to the average person, without understanding that they are a spirit soul, it is actually just too far of a jump. The reason is, if a person cannot understand their own spiritual nature. I love it. We are a spirit soul. I can't even understand myself. A tiny sample, my own existence, which I'm living, and I can't perceive that I'm a spirit soul. What possibility is there to then understand the spiritual existence of anyone else, even another living entity? And how much more impossible is it to then consider of the spiritual existence of the supreme, infinite spiritual soul? You see what I mean? I can't, if we can't see our own spiritual nature.
Well, just gradually.
Yes.
It's just like, you know, I mean, I come from such a conditioned background. You know, everybody, Carl Jung, is just completely conditioned. But for me, I don't think that, you know, God realization is that a difficult thing. You know, but obviously, you know, I've hung around you for quite a little while. So,
yes.
But, you know, I just, yeah, it's really hard because, you know, I just think that Krishna is more accessible than just, you know, dhyana and karma, and I don't think it's like,
preaching Krishna consciousness is not jnana or karma.
Yeah. But then, you know, that's the thing, because they need jnana to realize, you know, what
the object is. The cultivation of knowledge comes about through purification and hearing. one doesn't have to be a jnani. Therefore, Krishna did, when Krishna spoke to Bhagavad-gita, he didn't select a jnani. He could have selected the asanas. He could have selected, you know, many great scholars, but he didn't. He selected a warrior, a family man and a warrior. Because there is no condition in the Bhagavad-gita where it says that one has to be a knowledgeable jnani in order to understand Krishna consciousness. What is stated in the Bhagavad-gita is that one has to hear from authorities and be purified. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad-gita, it describes that some describe the soul as amazing. Some hear of him as amazing. And others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. In that third one, Srila Prabhupada describes that it is purification that gives one the eligibility to accept something when they hear. So, for instance, you know, with my daughters, even when they were 2 years old, right, they've never read a book. They're not scholars. They're 2 years old. If I say to them, you're a spirit soul, you live forever, the spirit soul is in your body, and when you die, the spirit soul or go into another body or back to the spiritual world, they say, yes, Dad. That's it. Because, and they've always accepted that to this very day. Because there's some purification, and just by hearing that knowledge which has been, and purification which has been cultivated in many, many lifetimes, they can just accept. They don't have to be a scholar. Even at 2 years old, you're a spirit soul. Oh, yes, Dad. Okay. And they might ask a couple of questions. You answer the questions. And they just accept. So, you know, Krishna doesn't say anywhere here that one has to be some, you know, scholar or philosopher. In fact, usually, in many places, Krishna describes that the so-called scholars and philosophers and people of knowledge are less qualified because they're more of an ass than others who don't have that knowledge. The more qualified the person becomes in materialistic knowledge, the less qualified they become to be able to understand Krishna consciousness. It has nothing to do, so I'm not making the point that we have to go out and look for scholars and somehow, you know, people who can understand philosophy. I mean, you know, any person, any human being, practically from any age, if they have the purification and you say to them, you are an eternal spiritual being, you live forever. You're not that body, you're an eternal living being in the body. Most people can accept that. Yeah. You know, a little child at 2 years old knows the difference between, you know, I won't live out the rest of the day and I'm going to live forever. They know that difference. You know, if you said to them, you know, Daddy won't be home for dinner, I'll be dead by lunchtime. they'll be upset because they can understand. You know, if you take a little pet animal and you say, oh, you know, unfortunately, you know, your little pet's going to die, and you know, they understand, it's temporary. If you say, you know, the spirit soul lives forever, they say, oh, they can understand that. It's, and they don't have to be a scholar. That's the difference between spirit and matter. Something that's eternal is spiritual, and something which is temporary is material. So, the point being that if we can't understand that concept of, and see it within ourselves, how can we see it in anyone else? And if we can't see it in ourselves and anyone else, how is it possible then to discuss the eternal spiritual nature of God? It just doesn't, you know, that concept never, people will pay lip service, but they can't quite put their faith in it because the realization of knowledge that we're a spirit soul just hasn't manifested. And as soon as one does accept that I am an eternal spiritual living being within the body, it immediately opens up the doors that yes, they can begin to understand God. That although I am eternal, but I am, you know, tiny spirit soul, but he is the supreme spirit soul, unlimited potency. So, and as soon as we can actually have some understanding that God is eternal, we can understand religious principles. Real religious principles. Because you see here that with Jainism, which, you know, Krishna defeats in this chapter, there are many people who believe in God but don't actually believe God is actually an eternal spiritual being. God is, for a lot of people, God is a concept. So, for instance, back in the 70s, some women protested against the fact that God is always seen as a male personality, and so they declared that we will now worship God as a woman. Someone presented that to Srila Prabhupada, but the underlying point there is that they actually believe that whatever I imagine God to be or want him to be, whatever I conceive him to be, that he will be. He is a concept that I have created and I can worship him in that way. And you will worship God in your way because you have your different you know, concept of God. I have my concept of God. So they all have these, in other words, God can be anything and everything at any different time according to what we want him to be, but he actually has no fixed form or you know, personality. So of course the what's the answer to that? What would you say to that? If someone comes, you know, because you're here. What would you say to that? Someone, you know, throws that at you that, you know, you have your concept of God, you think he's a little blue boy, playing the flute. we have our concepts, you know, you believe God is a man, you believe God is a woman, you know. Probably the same.
Depends on who you get. If you get somebody who's inquisitive, then they'll listen to you, don't. And then pop up their own.
No, they're wanting us to listen to their concept. They're saying, I'm telling you about God. It's actually not that difficult. That, for instance, we have a Prime Minister in Australia. He is the leader of Australia. Now, people may conceive of him in any way they like, but it doesn't change what he actually looks like and what his characteristics are. I may think that, you know, I will paint a picture of the Prime Minister of Australia, and he will, you know, have a nice pink frock and a little bonnet and pink high heels, because I conceive of him as, you know, like this. People may conceive of, you know, Prime Minister Rudd as anything they like, but it actually, what they believe or don't believe has nothing to do with reality. It's not a question of belief. You know, we may say, you know, I believe that today, you know, I'm actually the most wealthy man in the world. You know, we may think like that, but we may still not have a penny to our name. Reality does not depend upon our belief. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, also God, is not something which is concocted. So, again, coming back to the spirit soul, one needs to understand the nature of the spirit soul as an individual with form. Here it actually states that. You know, in the purport, when one correctly identifies oneself as eternal spiritual form, one achieves the real fruit of knowledge. So, in understanding the spirit soul, it's the beginning, of course, is to understand, yes, I am eternal. But the spirit soul is also has other characteristics which also so need to be understood in order to also understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to understand that we are individuals, and we have an individual, an eternal spiritual form. It is because, just like you know, when we put on the jumper, it is because the body appears to have form. When we put on the jumper, then the jumper takes the form of the body. So it's a covering. What the, you know, the jumper, you know, is covering gives it form. In the same way, that the material body covers the spirit soul, because the spirit soul actually has form, has senses. Therefore, the material body takes the form. The spirit soul has an eternal form, and the spirit soul is an individual eternal form. These things, of course, need to be understood. Individual, you know, if I you know, have some breakfast, and you know, other people don't have breakfast, then I will be full and satisfied, and they will not be. If we were all one, then when I eat, everyone else will feel completely satisfied. Huh? it's not difficult to understand that we're individuals, you know. If I am very happy about something, and you can be very happy, you walk past on the street and you see someone, very distressed. Because they're individual, we are individual, we are not experiencing life in the same way. We're having individual experiences, but we're individual people. So, although we're eternal, we also have individuality and we have form, and it is the spirit soul which is actually moving the material body in the same way that the jumper covers the body. When the body moves, the jumper moves. Right? We'd be foolish to think that the jumper is moving his arm. You see? If I'm moving my arm and someone thinks, oh, where can I get one of those jumpers? They move his arm like this. And where can I get some socks at Ganga, because they push his feet along. The covering of the body appears to be moving, but actually it's a body. But the body is another covering, and what's actually giving motion and activity to the material covering is the spirit soul. So, understanding these qualities, then we can start to look at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That yes, I can perceive my own spiritual nature. I certainly also understand that I am not the supreme. I am not the maintainer of all living entities. Bhushan, they call it, the supreme. Again, we are all struggle to provide for ourselves a few relatives and a few friends. Some people may become Prime Minister, they can maintain for a short period of time, for a few years, their nation. Or sometimes they become Prime Minister, the ruler of the nation, and they can't even maintain their country. Just like when Mao Zedong was ruling, and Stalin, millions and millions of people died of starvation. Because even though they had the position of the maintainer of a few people, not everyone in the world, but some, because they actually couldn't do it, millions of people died. So even if we're very powerful, we're not the maintainer of all living entities. Even if we were emperor of the entire world and we were actually good at our job and we maintained all human beings, we're still not, feeding all the ants and the elephants and the birds. We're not maintaining what we speak of others on other different planetary systems. So in that way we can understand that although we are maintaining some, we're not maintaining all living entities. That is, there is a difference between our tiny abilities and the abilities of the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, knowing these different qualities of the spirit soul, we can then begin to look at the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Soul. He is eternal. He also has spiritual form, spiritual senses, except that because he's the controller of everything, therefore he's not forced to accept the material body according to the laws of karma. So there are some differences and some similarities. Similarly, we look at this whole material universe and we can see that it is a material covering. There must be a soul within the material universe for the material creation to take place. Because matter, without the energy of the soul does not do anything. Some may say, we see in nature that things are moving, we see the waves are moving. It doesn't appear to be any spirit. But if you look at the waves, something is pushing the waves. There is the wind, something is pushing the wind. And we have the heat of the sun giving temperature. Or something is pushing the energy from the sun. And if you go on, you'll find that something is pushing that, something is pushing that. And ultimately, when you get to that which is pushing matter, it is spiritual. And without that spiritual push, matter does not do anything. In the same way that you have a train, you may say, oh, this carriage is moving, it doesn't have an engine. But the original carriage, which has an engine, pushed, another carriage pushed that one, like this, they all get pushed. Okay? Ultimately, there must be spirit which pushes matter. Out, because we have a spirit soul in the individual body, therefore the Supreme Spirit must be there to push, the huge universal creation. So the scientists, of course, they will say everything comes from a Big Bang. Right? And Sri Prabhupada said to one of his disciples, what is this Big Bang? His disciples said, big noise? I think he had something more philosophical in mind. But Prabhupada was explaining that where do we see that there's a big explosion and that no one has made some arrangement? In other words, okay, even if we accept that there was a Big Bang by which the universe, that was the push, the push of the universe into its present condition, who organised that and who assembled the ingredients? Now we know, so for instance, if we were sitting here and down the road we hear a Big Bang, what would we do? The police would come, there would be police cars everywhere, and they'd all turn up, and then the newspapers would, come, and the television cameras. They don't do that anymore. And they would say, and the reporter would say, what happened? Oh, by chance, there was a Big Bang. Oh, everybody go home. We don't see that, when there's a Big Bang anywhere, everyone asks, who did it? Do you ever see, in the newspapers, big explosion, 55 people killed, completely accidental, just happened by chance, no investigation needed, case closed. So whenever there's a Big Bang, we say, well, who has gathered the ingredients and assembled and, set the timer, And then again, for instance, if you see a Big Bang that's not done very expertly, just like sometimes there were some animal activists in New Zealand, and I think it was the Harry Bowles, so-called splinter group, but they were against, cow killing and what have you. They were actually going to create a bomb to, blow up the abattoirs or something, yeah. And the bomb went off and blew them to pieces, So, if people are not very intelligent, they can make a big mess with a Big Bang. But you see, when there's a Big Bang, sometimes you see they have these huge skyscrapers, right in the middle of the city. And they set their explosions so expertly, this whole building just comes down and falls exactly where they want it. It crumbles in a certain way. And that way it doesn't destroy. Otherwise it would just, you know, destroy a whole block of buildings. So that's expert. Now, even if we say, oh, there's a big bang, but look at this big bang. Look at, you know, what it has created. Now, who set that up? You know? Who set up that? You know, there was a big push from the Big Bang and this beautiful, you know, creation where everything works to a split second timing has resulted. You know? So therefore, you know, even if we give them credit that there was a Big Bang, it's still, then that proves the existence of God, not that it disproves. So, in this part, if one can't understand the nature of the spirit soul in one's own body, how it is, you know, moving matter, then there is no possibility of understanding how the Supreme Spirit can manifest the universal creation. And therefore, we have the whole world, because they can't understand, they're not the body, therefore they cannot make that huge jump of understanding to understand the supreme within the universal body, and therefore the whole world is bewildered by modern science. Not, as I said, a lot of scientists are, you know, God-fearing, religious, but there's a huge proportion who actually, you know, their very purpose is to disprove the existence of God and to prove that everything is going on and that God is not to be seen anywhere. God is just, you know, if you want to be a scientist, stop talking about God because it is unscientific. That's the conception. But actually, the fact is, the real scientists can perceive both the material elements and the spiritual elements. So, but if the scientists cannot understand that they are a spirit soul, then with all their science they will make the same mistake looking at just the large universal body. The same mistake they made looking at their own body, thinking that things are going on materially without, and there is nothing spiritual to be perceived, they will make the exact same mistake when they look at the universe, and their science will go on and on and on, and they will always remain with that imperfect understanding. And as soon as they understand, I am not this body, I am spirit soul, then immediately those scientists begin to be able to use their science and perceive the Supreme Soul within the universal creation. So, you know, in this way, it is very important. You know, if a person cannot understand that they are a spirit soul, individual spirit soul with eternal form, eternal individuality, transcendental senses, if they cannot understand that, they have no knowledge, you know, which is not stolen by the illusory energy, maya brihadigan. All the knowledge is stolen by illusion if they cannot understand that point. And as soon as they understand that point, I'm not this body, I'm the spirit soul, then they open up so many doors of very advanced material and spiritual knowledge. So as we discussed in the beginning, when we speak to people, it is important to assess, you know, what understanding before we start talking religion or, you know, giving up the material world or you know, God, you know, discussing God. You know, assess what is your understanding that you're not this body, you're a spirit soul. You should, and according to how readily they can accept that and understand that, then you can go on to talk of God. And if they can appreciate, you know, the Supreme Spirit, then it's very easy for them when you say, so give up this material world, surrender everything. Yes, they can understand. But until that, you know, without that preliminary knowledge, everything else cannot be understood. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Guru. Give a wonderful class, because big man cannot produce such nice plants. The delicateness, even the small babies. So, how can they make anything? That's why Prabhupada was saying always, chemicals cannot produce chemicals.
Yes.
You give me an example, any scientist can make it.
That's right.
And the scientists will always say we can cure this, we can cure that, because they haven't got the understanding of their spiritual soul. They are part of Krishna.
They also, you know, it begs the question that where did the material elements come from? It still doesn't answer the source of creation, you say. And some of them may say, you know, well, the elements are in a gaseous type of state floating in space. So where did those elements come from? Where did space come from? Space is actually another subtle material element. You know, where did all those elements come from? Okay. What to speak of here assembly.
They are in the biggest illusion.
What's that?
The scientists are in the biggest illusion.
Yes.
Because they do not know their spiritual souls.
Yeah.
They are the biggest.
Yeah. That's stated in the Upanishad, and you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur used to sing songs describing that you know, the more a person becomes advanced in material knowledge, without that spiritual understanding, they become more and more of an ass, you know. Because they become, you know, more absorbed in the illusion, more convinced of the illusion.
Prabhupada also tells that they are working on the bodily platform only. They are not even going to mental platform or intellectual platform.
Yes.
What to say of transcendental platform?
Yes.
They just don't know basic.
It's like, you know, there are sort of subtle states of, say, madness where we might daydream and we might, you know, just wander off in our mind and we start to imagine that, you know, if I was the most popular person in the world, you know, the best singer, and I had so much money. And we, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't know if you've ever done that, you just sort of go on and on and on, you know. So you know that you're, you know, in an illusion. It's not real, but, you know, you sort of, you go with it. So it's sort of foolish, you're sort of wasting your time, it's not reality, but you have some sense that, you know, that's not the way it is. But a person who gets right into it, you know, and starts to accept that as reality, you know, they're really completely in illusion. You know, they become, you know, more in a state of madness, intoxication. So, you know, that's what it's like for people who develop, you know, great material knowledge without any spiritual understanding. They just become more and more absorbed and enamored and entangled in the illusion as the all in all. Without, you know, barely a second to ever, you know, conceive it being something different. They can totally convince.
Yesterday's verse was wonderful, because he is telling that three moves are making their subtle body and gross body. Mm-hmm. So they can't understand how the three moves are making their subtle and gross body.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, here Krishna is been teaching us about the spirit soul, and then that knowledge should then step by step lead one to understand the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you know, by cultivation of that knowledge becomes you know, detachment develops automatically, becomes very easy to detach oneself from the material world, knowing one is eternal and has spiritual form and spiritual activities in relationship to the Supreme Spirit, becomes very easy, you know, not such a difficult thing to sort of not be enamored in the material world, to gradually become detached and become attached to the eternal world. It's a natural progression. But to try and, teach people about detachment before that sort of level of understanding is a waste of time. I know sometimes I have sat with certain devotees and, a guest has come along and I've been speaking with a guest, and just knowing that, they really just have no understanding of their own spiritual nature, just, there's nothing there, and you just try and give them a few little drops like that. And I've had a couple of devotees beside me literally boasting about the austerities they perform. Oh, we only sleep, 4 to 6 hours, and we do this, we do that, and people won't be attracted. They'll think you're crazy. I remember people used to come to the farm, and there was a family who lived in a very small place, probably not as big as that here. Three children, mother and father, and the ceiling probably wasn't as high as three quarters of the deity altar, and nowhere near as big as that here and there. But my experience was, when people would come walk past and they would say, "Oh, there's someone living there," and I would try and hide the fact, but if it come out that our family lived in there, I certainly won't be moving on to the farm in a hurry. The other day I was listening to a tape where a devotee was talking to Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying, if Krishna wanted us to perform, austerities, we should be prepared to do that. And Prabhupada says, why do you think Krishna is such a fool that he would want you to perform some, foolish austerity? Krishna wants all his devotees to live comfortably. Why would he, do you think God is a fool that he wants everyone to suffer? And of course, that's what people would think, that, if you start talking about austerities and things like that before there's any real spiritual understanding, people think you're a fool and your God is a fool. I'm more intelligent than your God. I know that to be happy I've got to live, I have to have certain measures. That's what they think. And it's actually Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, who specifically, knowing that in Kali Yuga, what to speak of normal standard of life, that, there's normal austerities and difficulties that people just take it, they're not unnormal or undue. People can't even take that. People are so need, constant sense gratification that even the normal level of, tolerating, life is beyond them. And therefore, he introduced that, he started to show that devotees can ride in automobiles. Don't go walking through the streets bare feet, or in, wood slippers, with a danda and pre-Krishna consciousness. Get in the car, whatever is made available, whether it be a Rolls Royce or, something. It doesn't matter how, get in a car that runs well and go out and preach like that, and people will be attracted. You walk around bare, even what the Goswami did 500 years ago is no longer, it was for them, even 500 years ago, what the Goswami did in Vrindavan, to sit beneath a different tree, you know, a couple of days, and so as not to get attached to the same tree and move to another tree, you know. So simple. It was even difficult in those days. Now it's just, you know, it's not possible. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati introduced that, and Srila Rupa Goswami preached, knowing how, you know, the age will change, Yukta Vairagya. And we see that Srila Prabhupada was very expert using, you know, microphones, books, cars, planes, everything, you know, opulent temples, so that you know, people will you know, be attracted to Krishna consciousness. And just, you know, the tiniest little austerities is very difficult. If we say to people, you know, your austerity is eat Krishna prasadam, and they'll say, oh my god, you know. You know, for them it is, they can't do it. No, I must have some meat and some fish, yeah, eggs. You know, just eat, you know, halva, samosa, chutney, rice, and I'm here 100. You know, dal, sabji. Everyone looking at me, oh, I can't. And it, you know, they can't do that. It's that austerity, eat Krishna prasadam to your full satisfaction, as Srila Prabhupada would say. You know, eat to your full satisfaction and to your walk and your waddle like a duck. When I joined Krishna consciousness, I was addicted to all sorts of intoxication, something even better. Anyway, I'd actually tried for many, many years to give up this, give up that. Couldn't do it. And I was sort of known as a person who had a reasonable amount of determination amongst my friends. But anyway, I started eating Krishna prasadam, and I just lost all desire. You know, no cravings. And I used to... I remember in the evenings, we were travelling on the Maya's bus, and you know, we, prasadam would come, they would serve out, and I would have, you know, one of those big steel plates, and I would be, you know, like a full plate of halva to start on, fill it up with hot, because I wanted it hot, really runny of it, and I'd eat that plate of halva. Then I'd have my meal, maybe a couple of, you know, a couple of plates. Then some more halva. After that, then they would serve hot milk. We used to have hot milk. So the trick was, you had to drink it as hot as you could. They cooked a certain amount. If you drank it while it was practically boiling hot, it meant you could get 2-3 cups before it ran out. So what you do is you sit from the edge. Yeah, I don't know. You sit from the edge. It's, you know, just a couple of drops, but it cools it down just a fraction. And you can actually drink a cup. And by the time they're still blind, like this, you've got a cup now, you've gone back and sit. So I get, you know, maybe 3 cups. And then there was time, you know, time for bed. I'd lay down, you know, sometimes either on the bus or in the bushes, you know, beside the bus. And I'd lay down, and my head would be just spinning, you know. The universe would be just spinning around. And I think, oh, Krishna consciousness is, you know, so wonderful. I can't wait for breakfast, you know. And then, you could do that.
There is Krishna consciousness.
Eh?
Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. But, you know, so the point being, it's not that difficult. It's actually almost, you know, sense gratification. But people can't do it. That's the level of austerity. So, you know, to be presenting Krishna consciousness. And I, again, on the first time I met Ramaswami, which is the first day I was here at the temple, And I said to him, you know, do those who take cold showers? And he said, oh, I'll do this. So he just completely played it down. He didn't go into it. He almost, like, you know, didn't want to discuss it. Because the next day I left with the Maheswami on his bus. And then we went to Adelaide. And then a few days later we were out in the Nullarbor Desert. You know, 3:30 in the morning, get up in your coat and pour in a freezing cold bucket of water over here, and in a bath in the middle of the desert. You know, and we did that as we travelled around. Absolutely freezing. Devotees used to, some of the brahmacharis used to hide way out. You know, you'd call for them, you know. They just disappeared out in the desert or something. They wouldn't come in for that cold bath, they'd wait for the sun to come. But had he said to me, you know, oh, Ganga, you know, we're travelling on the bus, you know, I hope you're ready to, you know, stand out in the desert, you know, and show a freezing cold bucket of water over your head. I said, maybe I'll come on the next trip, you know. But, you know, but as you start to hear the philosophy, you understand your spirit soul, and you're trying to live, yes, I'm a spirit soul, and, you know, you understand it pleases the Supreme Lord to preach, and like that, then you're prepared to do whatever has got to be done. But it's something that, you know, is later. But the first thing is just to help people to understand that they're a spirit soul. Alright, so I'll just leave it there, and go ahead and, you know, nice and fish out. Hare Krishna.